Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I have every right in this land to speak up. I have a right to be angry. I have every right to shout if I want to shout. So just because I'm fed up with this.
Can I ask you one more question? But you say someone grabbed your arm for talking. What happened?
The policeman grabbed my arm because he wanted to take me over there so nobody could hear me saying what I wanted to say. I didn't attack the policeman. I didn't come to him, but I got grabbed anyway.
Yeah.
No, but first, for a person to have an argument, you must have an argument with somebody else.
Yeah.
But I was the one that was grabbed. Why? Because I'm loud. Because I speak my mind, and because I'm black.
Keep speaking your mind, man.
I ain't lying. I ain't got nothing against white people. I got white people around me all the time, so it don't make no difference to me. I'm talking about fairness. This lady here could be quite fair to me, and I could be friends forever. Just because she's white doesn't mean I'm a gangster. What I'm against is the system that we live in.
Well, the partner of the man whose death triggered the weekend's riots has told Channel 4 News that the protests against his death have got out of control. In her first television interview, Simone Wilson denied that Mark Duggan was a gangster and criticised the police for their lack of communication with his family after he died. But she said the riots of the last 3 days have nothing to do with the initial protest march in Tottenham on Saturday. Our Home Affairs correspondent Simon Israel reports.
Simone Wilson is still in shock, still struggling to pick up the pieces, still trying to get answers. Mark Duggan was her partner and was the man police shot dead in Tottenham last Thursday night. The demonstration that followed wanted answers. The riots that followed wanted something else.
There's a lot of angry people out there. People that don't even know Mark are angry at the way it was dealt with.
Who do you hold responsible?
Police. Definitely police. My children don't know. Mark's children don't know that he's gone. We can't tell them yet because they're going to be asking questions that don't have the answers to it.
In Tottenham, the communities are awash with rumour. Thursday night's official version was Duggan opened fire, the police shot back, and these pictures show the aftermath. CPR couldn't change anything. Then there were reports of only 2 bullets being fired, and the one that lodged in a police radio may be police issue. More rumours.
If he had the gun in his hand, why didn't they shoot him in his hand to disarm him? Why did he get a shot to his chest? They're telling me they can't answer that question. They don't know. That's all I'm getting. They don't know.
The vacuum of uncertainty prompted the demonstration. They wanted answers. Tottenham police didn't have them. Worse still, they waited in hope. They were told the police commissioner was on his way, but he never arrived.
I know Mark. Mark is not going to do that. 100%. 100%. Mark is the kind of person, if he did have a gun, which I don't know, if he did, Mark would run. Mark is a runner. He would run rather than firing. And that's coming from the bottom of my heart. I know. I know.
Did you know he had a gun?
No.
So that was a surprise to you?
That was a surprise. Mark, they're portraying Mark to be a gangster. Mark is not a gangster. He's not known to any gangsters or any gangs. He's not like that.
Today, the Independent Police Complaints Commission promised that the results of ballistic tests will be known in the next 24 hours. But Channel 4 News has learned that the bullet that killed Mark Duggan and the bullet that lodged in an officer's radio were both fired by police. Some community leaders in Tottenham are adamant the riots were not the first police operation that went pear-shaped and where the potential consequences were only barely thought through.
The expectation, I think, of the local community was that senior people would be on hand to provide comfort, policing, but also answers to families like the Duggan family.
And they were. They were either at the yard or they were on holiday.
That's what I'm told. And that is unacceptable, given that obviously the public expectation is that people recognise the importance of this situation once it had happened on Thursday.
It's got out of hand, but it's gone way past. It's not connected to this anymore. I don't think it's got nothing to do with the march. This is out of control. It's out of control. Innocent people are getting hurt. Children have got no homes. It's just not needed at all.
And now it's even further out of hand, with another night ahead of disturbances verging on riots. But what's emerging about what triggered all of this last week offers little comfort if it turns out there was no gunfight, in direct contradiction of the official version.
Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, and for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, August 21st, 2016. So I have been told this is our global Sunday talk on racism monthly installment. Folks have commentary, questions they would like to ask, or observations, what have you. Feel free chime in. The number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. The audio segment you heard at the beginning of the program, that was from 5 years ago. Some of the audio interviews, what have you, dealing with the unrest in London after the shooting of Mark Duggan. You heard from the mother of his children, his partner. You also heard some of the different interviews where they were talking to folks. Significant moment. They were doing some anniversary reports over the past couple of weeks. As I stated yesterday, in my view, that is one of our signature events that we covered here, the context of white supremacy. We had a lot of different guests on the program, black people from the UK during that period. I know we had Paul Ifeomi Grant visited with us, Leo Muhammad, Dr. William Les Henry, just an array of folks. It was a lot more people even than what I'm mentioning now, who visited with us over that month of August 2011, just to kind of give us information from Ground Zero. You can go back in the archives and hear some of that footage. But really, in my view, if you understand racism, white supremacy, and you look at the way that entire episode was talked about, you will see the anti-blackness, the white supremacy. In fact, I think I can play one little snippet. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but this one little segment I will not forget anytime soon tells you about as much as you need to know about the coverage and everything around the event, the death of Mark Duggan, the shooting of Mark Duggan, and then the subsequent unrest that followed for about the next week, 10 days or so in the UK. This is a segment that was played on the BBC repeatedly. The only reason that I got it, the first time it played, I was upset because I think I stayed up all night to watch the coverage of this once things kicked off. And then as it continued, I just continued to pay attention and try to learn as much as I could. But the first time I heard this snippet that you're about to hear, I was not recording. I was just watching the coverage, and I was mad that I didn't, you know, have a recording. And they looped it and played it again. In fact, they played it several times. So if I had missed it even twice, I would have been able to get it. But this, I'm just going to play a quick snippet. It's by 30 seconds, and then we'll get to some of the folks who dialed in. This is a segment that aired on the BBC within the first 5 days after Mark Duggan was killed and the unrest in the UK.
I'm ashamed to be a black guy. I'm ashamed to be a black...
No, rat.
The mobs were feral.
Feral rat.
I saw a, you know, an image of a boy, you know, a black boy making a white boy strip in the street. To me, those things are reprehensible. And those people should have more than the book thrown at them.
His prophecy was absolutely right.
I'm ashamed to be a black guy seeing a lot of young other black people causing this trouble and bringing our names down.
The segment that you heard just right there. I'm ashamed to be a black guy having all of these people out rioting, causing trouble, making us look bad. I can't say incredible, because in the system of white supremacy, you shouldn't be surprised. But that stunning moment of all of that. Again, there were more whites. This is one of the themes I said repeatedly the entire time everything was happening. It's uncontested. There were way more whites out rioting and acting a fool, looting, whatever you want to call it, in response to all of this. Way more. That is uncontested evidence. All you have to do is go back and look at the video or pictures, anything that happened during all of this. I never heard one interview, one report of any white person saying, oh my Lord, I'm ashamed. This is disgraceful. All of these whites out rioting and acting a fool in the streets. Never heard anything even close to resembling that. And then I think they had the other moment that was connected to that, where they had this white historian on the BBC saying that, yes, the whites were acting like savages, but they were acting like black people. Historic moment. As this is our global conversation, I'm going to double check to make sure I did not miss any of our listeners that we have in. Some of the folks, I was not able to nab them at the beginning of the program, so I'm just going to take a quick 20 seconds to see if we have them. Okay, just taking quick couple seconds to make sure I did not miss anybody. I know we have Lorraine with us. Lorraine, you are one of our listeners in the UK. You're with us, ma'am?
Yes, I am.
Outstanding.
Outstanding.
While I'm double checking to see some of our other folks
that I bring in.
You are in the UK.
You are in the UK. What are your memories from everything that unfolded in the summer of
2011 after Mark Duggan was killed?
Gosh, my memories basically was the way how, I don't know, it was very split, the way how people had viewed the whole thing. There were people that thought that it was about time that something was done, but it's not necessarily the way that they would have done it, but they were glad that something was done, because the police, they were constantly getting away with stop and search and, you know, incidents of people dying in custody. So my memory was really of people saying that finally someone's going to hear about how many people were dying within that situation. I remember the riots. I remember the television just completely saturated with the riots. I remember walking through the town centre and seeing how the riots had affected the area. And to be honest, I was absolutely surprised to know that there were very few black people involved in that. The way how it was presented through the media, it appeared as though there was a lot more black people involved in it than there actually were. It just as you would expect it to be, you know, the way how they put it forward, just as you would expect it to be. you know.
The David Starkey, I remember that he said the whites that are out doing all this, they're black. This is a famous historian, white historian in the UK, David Stark, where he invoked the legacy of Enoch Powell, this white man in the 1960s who had said that there are going to be rivers of blood. That's the name of his speech, infamous, rivers of blood, and this is going to be terrible, having all of these black people coming over from the Caribbean and other places where whites have terrorized and quote-unquote colonized, that this is going to be awful and we need to stop all this immigration, some of the same type of rhetoric that you're hearing now around Brexit and everything else. But, yeah, that everything that you just laid out, I heard a lot of that. What kind of do you remember as being the fallout, I guess, in terms, because I think that was some of the things that people were talking about. They felt that it could have, some of this could even have been agent provocateurs, because this was right around the same time that you were having the Occupy Wall Street, and that kind of spread to other areas of the world, not just in the States, and they felt that this could have been some racist shenanigans to go out and do this and then blame black people, and then you can enact really tough laws and other types of things to punish black people, non-white people in the UK as a result of this. Do you remember what happened subsequently in the months, years after everything that went down in August 2011?
I think that people started to become aware of the fact that the chances were that it was a setup. I think that people are now more aware that anytime there's anything that you know, like a protest or anything of that nature, that the chances are that it's a setup. You know, here and abroad, in America as well. Nobody trusts anymore. I don't think people are quite as easily fooled as they were before. You know, we've heard the stories about agents. We've heard stories where, you know, you, like, for example, we was listening to something on the YouTube, me and a friend of mine, and there was a report where one of the presenters said, oh, acting, he used the word acting, the people acting, he slipped up, and they kept him rewinding it to show that it was an act. There was also reports where people have shown agents that have got the same shoes on, they've got stamps on the bottom of the shoes that the agents wear, and these people are the ones that start the riots and stuff. So people are more aware of that fact, and a lot of people realise that it did start off about somebody, and then it ended up being about something else, and they feel upset about the fact that that's what happened. It no longer became about Mark, it became about something else. You know, I don't know if I'm answering the question correctly.
Oh, for sure, absolutely. And that, I think, for people, particularly people in the United States, where this same sort of thing has been occurring over the last few years, I think those same type of concerns where there is legitimate anger about, even if you want to go all the way back to 1992 with Rodney King and the verdict and everything that happened in L.A., but the same type of thing where there is legitimate anger about the terrorism that black people experience under the system of white supremacy, but racists, they are so conniving and so well organized that they can easily divert from that legitimate frustration and do whatever they want to just, you know, make this something that's totally unrelated and can be a pretense for, if they want to change laws, if they want to use enforcement officials to be even more brutal against black citizens, that it's easy for them to create that sort of situation. I know I'm still hoping that we can get Mark Duggan's partner on the program to kind of get her perspective. It would be great to hear from her 5 years later. I know they were doing some Black Lives Matter marching and what have you with the 5-year anniversary. Have you seen anything just within the past few weeks or so in terms of recognition for what happened, talking about anything? Have you seen any of those type events?
No, I haven't. I haven't really been doing much research, I must say, over the past few weeks on the internet. And, you know, I'm not really sort of into the television, so I haven't really been connected over the past few weeks.
Right on.
Probably wouldn't.
Oh, I'm
no, I'm going to say I wouldn't be the best person to ask in that regard. I do need to sort of, my friend keeps telling me, I need to really catch up more on what's going on the internet.
Right on. Just real quick, did you hear that segment where on the BBC where they had the black male saying that he was ashamed to be a black guy with black people out doing all this? Did you hear that at that time, or was that the first time that you've heard that bit of audio?
That's the first time I've heard it. But I'm not surprised to hear it, really, to be honest. I just feel that because we don't have any opportunity to gather, and because we're not spending time in each other's company, we're not able to share that wisdom. We're not able to share that knowledge. There are some of us that actually, you know, seek for ourselves, but there's a large number of people who just believe what they see on the news. It's not helpful. So we're not having that time together, you know, which is a shame.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just I wanted to ask you about Dr. Sebi, because you had messaged me about his passing just a few days back, actually, to just, you know, give time to speak to that as well. But I wanted to make sure I emphasized, we talked about this regularly back in 2011 when we covered all this, but the 16, or I'm not sure if she was 16, but I know she was a teenager, was a black female. The Mark Duggan was shot and killed on Thursday. I think that was August 4th, 2011. Saturday, August 6th, they had a group of people, Mark Duggan's family and just people that were concerned, you know, upset about what happened. They went to the police station to get more information about the shooting. They did not get any information, as you heard in the audio I played at the beginning of the program. And a black female teenager was shoved by enforcement officials. That was a key moment. I think that kind of gets pushed to the side, overlooked frequently. I know a lot of the black guests that we had on back in 2011, that was a point that they brought up repeatedly. And I think that's important as well in remembering everything that went down in London. As I said, you had messaged me about Dr. Sebi a few weeks ago. I think folks know he transitioned all of his efforts, immense time and energy that he put into trying to do as much as he could to heal black people, naturally get away from a lot of the quote-unquote Western medicine that is really just poisoning and nothing to help and replenish the health of black people. Just any thoughts you wanted to share on the passing of Dr. Sebi?
Highly suspicious. I understand that he had been arrested and accused of money laundering. I think he had the sum of something like 37,000. I'm not sure if it was dollars. I think it was dollars in his suitcase. They wanted to know what that money was there for, and they had him arrested. They had him in the cells. They arrested him again, and whilst he was incarcerated, or when they had him, you know, in the prison, that he ended up having pneumonia or something like that. But it's just highly suspicious, extremely highly suspicious.
Is that something people have been talking about in your part of the world, the passing of Dr. Sebi?
Yeah, I mean, the people in my circles, they have. I heard that another person died as well, someone by the name of Abdul Muhammad as well. I think he died. I can't remember his name. I think it's Abdul Muhammad. I'll have to check that one.
Okay.
He died recently as well, over the last 2 days. And he was also the same, you know, holistic dentist, I think he was.
Wow, I think...
Mysterious circumstances.
I know I stated, we were talking about, there was a black female doctor in the United States this week. She was writing, and we were talking about workplace racism and just... A point I reiterated that I think Dr. Sebi, as well as Dr. Francis Kress-Welsing, even some of the other guests that we've had on the program, even if you make an effort to open a private practice, open some sort of business to try to help black people with regards to health and a clinic of some sort similar to what the Black Panthers were doing, whites will make it very difficult on you. In fact, even remembering the legacy of the Black Panthers, they were trying to do the exact same thing in terms of opening clinics to help black people get screening and what have you, and just doing things that they could to try to improve the health and get health care for black people. When we had Alondra Nelson on the program, that's what her whole book is about, that's one of the key things that the Black Panther Party was doing here in the States that routinely gets ignored, overlooked, that sort of thing probably made racists much more angry and looking to destroy their efforts, as opposed to just, I think, the kind of superficial analysis where people just think of them in black leather jackets, berets, and guns, those type of programs, getting clinics, the food programs, and that sort of thing that they were doing. Even Mutulu Shakur in his efforts at getting black people off of drugs, And a lot of the successful things that he was doing, same thing, trying to appeal, trying to replenish the health of black people, him being in greater confinement, and then doing everything that they could to shut down his efforts. That is a consistent worldwide pattern, it seems, against black people. I'm going to double check. I know we have callers and just trying to add more people in as we roll, get some of your thoughts on the Olympics. Certainly, I thought it would be interesting to hear from some of our folks outside the States with regards to the Olympics, since they were just in London in 2012. Again, the number, if folks are interested in participating, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you have questions, observations, comments you would like to share as we roll along. Our caller, I think this is Thomas in New York, and then the caller at 4950. Did either of you all have questions, comments you wanted to make sure you got in?
No, Gus, I really didn't have any questions thus far. I was just listening. Thank you.
For sure, for sure. Caller at 4950, did you have questions, observations you wanted to get in?
Yeah, could you come back to me?
Oh, yes, sir. No problem. No problem.
I need the...
Let's see. We'll give him a few minutes. We'll circle back around and see if he has any thoughts. While they are waiting, as I said, I did want to check in on the Olympics. Not necessarily if you've been following, you know, the gold medal count or any of that, but just any thoughts or observations around what has taken place with the Rio Olympics 2016, Lorraine?
I haven't been following the Olympics. It's just one of those things that I'm definitely not into. The Roman Games, it's just not me.
Bravo. Bravo. Yeah, take the same position. I think one of our listeners on the program last night said they just did not see how, regardless of how well any of the black athletes did, that's not doing anything to improve things for black people, them getting a gold medal or lots of gold medals even, that's not doing anything to improve our quality of life or solve any of our problems as it relates to racism, white supremacy. In fact, I would even say the opposite seems to be the pattern that in 2012, I remember I had the report. I played on the program. We talked about it with some of our guests from London at the time, that a large number of black people in London were displaced from their residence for the Olympic Games when it was in London in 2012. There was an entire apartment building where they cleared out lots of the floors for the BBC reporters so that they could be there and have easy access to go cover the games and what have you. And these black residents, they couldn't even get access to their residents. And the exact same thing, it seems like it happened on a much wider scale in Rio with the displacement of black people to make room for the amusements of whites. At least the few contests, what have you, where I've seen where they've done like shots of the crowd and what have you. We're talking, and I think this is a point that's been emphasized on this program consistently. In the Western Hemisphere, Brazil has the highest population of black people, highly melanated people, in the Western Hemisphere. That is not reflected when you see any images of the crowds and who is participating in terms of spectators at these Olympics. That is not reflected at all. You see people with their USA flags or wherever they happen to be from the world. These look like folks who would be classified as white. They do not look like black people at all that are there. I don't care what's going down, whether it's Usain Bolt or Simone Biles or any of the other folks that they've been cheering about and talking about over this whole time. Did you happen to see anything, what happened with the U.S. swimmer Ryan Lochte? That's gotten a lot of attention. Did you catch that at all, or did that not make the radar over in the U.K.?
Not to me. It may well have done, but as far as I'm concerned, no.
Oh,
I haven't
okay.
watched any of it.
Outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding. This was the, so I'm sure folks in the U.S., because they've been talking about this around the clock, this suspected racist white guy. He is a swimmer for the U.S. He and I think it was three other white guys, they were out this past week partying or doing whatever it is, being drunk real, 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 real late. And they made up this lie that they had been robbed at gunpoint and that this guy had put a gun to his head and robbed them, took their money and all this. And then they actually had video footage of this encounter, and all these questions started to come up about maybe they lied, they were not reporting this accurately, and this came a huge to-do. They've been talking about this a lot in the States, even other parts of the world, obviously, because there's so much global attention on the Olympics, but that has become a big to-do over the last few days. If anything, standard operating procedure, I was going to say this on the program last night, Catherine Russell Brown, she's a black female professor. She has a book called The Racial Hoax, where she documents that this sort of thing, when racists come out and say, oh, I was raped, oh, I was robbed, oh, you know, whatever the story is. If folks remember Charles Stewart in Boston, where he said he was robbed, some black guy came and robbed him and shot and killed his pregnant wife, and then it came out months later that he did this as some sort of insurance scam. This is widespread in the system of white supremacy, and you can check out that book, Racial Hoax, These Sort of Incidents. It is a constant thing. I even remember Louisiana State University with the flooding and everything right now. Definitely recognize that. But Louisiana State University, they had an incident just within the last couple years where a white female student alleged that she had been kidnapped by some black person in a van, and they had this big to-do and campus alerts, and then found out that she lied about that too. So, I mean, constant within the system of racism, white supremacy. Let's see, the person, oh, this is a retired firefighter. I'm just checking in to make sure I'm not missing if folks have questions or observations that they would like to share. Retired firefighter, are you just listening, or did you have a question, observation you wanted to share, sir?
I have a longstanding observation that I would like the non-white black people in the place of that's called Europe to get their take on. I have studied the Olympics, what is called the quote-unquote modern-day version of the Olympics that started in 1896, I believe. As the years progressed on and on, I've noticed recently a lot of a significant amount of non-white black people from places on the earth that are called the participants originally come from these areas that are called quote unquote third world, and they would come to places like England and the Netherlands, some other countries, basically from the standpoint to participate. And perhaps make an income by going to the places that has income. Also, the areas on the earth where non-white black people are living, such as Kenya, they actually started participating as being able to participate in the Olympics, as they at the same time politically and through warfare, they were able to get the racist white man and woman basically out of their areas physically anyway. Did that sound correct as far from a historical standpoint?
To me it does. I think Lorraine, if she wants to comment, we can give her time as well. But to me, it does. I know I haven't been able to sit down and watch. And again, I certainly would not encourage. I absolutely endorse Lorraine's stance in terms of it's not even worth our time and energy with all the problems that we have to sit down and consume the amusements of whites. But I know in my experience of seeing the Olympics this year and previously, the times that I have seen it, where I've seen countries that are not known for having huge populations of black people, Great Britain, for example, or Italy or Germany. I don't think these areas of the world are known for having huge populations of black people. To me, it is always profound when you see their basketball team or their track team or, you know, some of their other competitors. And they have these folks with all this melanin. It's like, well, wait a minute, where did you get all these dark people from? I think I have noted that consistently down through the years, and exactly that. We, you know, in the system of racism, white supremacy, where you've had whites who have made a big to-do about we don't want these dark folks here anyway. And then, as you stated, causing instability, whether it's war or violence or poverty or whatever the case may be, in the areas where these black people are from. And then they, logically, they want to go to an area where they can get a better quality of life, maybe get a job or whatever the case may be, better chance for themselves. So they come to these areas and, oh, we can use these folks. We can put them on our team so we can, you know, be more competitive. We can beat the U.S. since they have all these melanated folks. We can be more competitive and maybe win a few games or so. I see the exact logic in that. It's not that I have a complaint or criticism of any of the black people that are, or non-white people that are doing this sort of thing, but I absolutely see that playing out and how these sporting events operate, not just this year, but historically.
I agree as far as a general, in general, it's severely as a waste of time and energy other than the athletes that can, for a brief period of time in their athletic prowess, make some money. Also, because I have been cultured for the most part, all of my life into sports in general, although I didn't participate necessarily in track and field, but just to give some racist stereotypes that used to go on, that was kind of like revealed as a lie. The whole idea that non-white black people could not run competitively, races that were longer than a quarter mile, and now you see almost all of the distance races, including the marathon. I don't know what was the results of the marathon recently, but I do know as far as the significant history of distance races from, I would say, the late 50s to early 60s. There was an Olympic Games in 1960 in Rome. From that point in time up to present, and anything beyond 400 meters, just about, non-white black people have dominated, male and female, have dominated places like Ethiopia, Kenya, the Sudan, you know, places, you know, in the continent of Africa. They basically dominate these. And at the same time, my point is to make it relevant to our conversation. At the same time, you were seeing non-white black people basically through counter violence, as well as through political activity to be more aware of the system of racism, white supremacy, and how it works in their area. You started seeing that at the same time as you started seeing these athletes show the world on these racist stereotypes. That's just my observation. Thank you.
For sure. For sure. Just one quick point I wanted to get in. We'll nab some of the other folks who dialed in also. But one quick point I did want to get in. We played the audio clip yesterday on the compensatory call-in about Dr. John Carlos, who was at the 68 Olympics, black male. He's the infamous image of he and Tommy Smith doing the what's recognized the Black Power Salute, where he was being interviewed and asked about whether or not black athletes should be political, should they protest against racism. And within that interview, they just kind of, they didn't make a big to-do about it, but they were talking about how he and Tommy Smith were mistreated as a result of doing this. They were mistreated at the games. I think they were kicked out of the Olympic Village at that time in 68. And then they didn't, normally, if you are an Olympic athlete and you win a medal, particularly if you win a gold, but if you win a medal, you do really well at the Olympics, you get all sorts of endorsements. You know, they put you on a cereal box, or you're doing commercials, or you can get, you know, a job at a university or a college, and whatever your sport, if it's track and field, then you can be a track and field coach, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. It can be an avenue for you to make money. You can do speaking engagements and that sort of thing where you can make, you know, a good bit of money. You can dramatically improve your quality of life if you perform well at the Olympics. That did not happen for Dr. John Carlos. It was really, really hard. He could not get coaching jobs in track and field, even though he had won a gold, or John Carlos won a bronze at the Olympics. He could not do that. He did not get endorsements. He did not get commercials. It caused so much stress on his marriage, which happens routinely with black people. The pressure of racism, white supremacy does not allow us to have those successful families, flourishing marriages. His wife committed suicide. And they just kind of glossed over that in the report, but I did not know that bit of information. He does have a book out, Dr. John Carlos, where he goes more into his thoughts on racism, his experiences. But I was stunned when I heard that, wanted to make sure that was emphasized yesterday, but I can bring it up now since we are talking about the Olympics. And also the statement he made at the end of that. Let's see. Okay, I think we are adding Andrew to the line as well, but good to hear from you, Andrew.
Hiya.
Yes, sir. Just finish up my point really quick, and then we'll include Andrew in the conversation as well as some of our other folks. But when Dr. John Carlos, towards the end of his interview, and he was saying that the Olympics is not political, you know, it's just about the sports and the athletes and competition and all that. It's not political. And he was saying that that's nonsense. You know, as soon as somebody wins, the first thing they do is go grab their flag. Everything about the Olympics is political. Are you telling me it's number one? Mr. Fuller would say, what do you mean when you say political? Start right there with the definition. Number two, are you telling me it's not political when they go through all the jousting about who is going to host the Olympics? I have seen all of that go down where they pull in. I remember Chicago. They were trying to get the Olympics this year to host in Chicago. And they pulled in First Lady Michelle Obama and all these other folks to come out and list all the accolades and how great it would be and what advantages would be for the athletes to have the games in Chicago and that sort of thing. Are you telling me that that's not political? Are you telling me it's not political when they play the national anthem? And particularly, if we're going to act a fool, I know Gabrielle Douglas, she got all the criticism because of how you're standing, or if you're not saluting, or if you're not smiling, or if you're not enthusiastic while they are playing the national anthem and all that. I mean, it's total not. Even they make sanctions about who can participate in the Olympics. I know they have done that before. If they don't agree with what a country is doing or not doing, you might not even be allowed to participate in the game. So in my view, the entirety of it is folly for anyone to come out of their mouth and say that the Olympics is not about politics. This is just sports and, you know, good competition amongst the athletes. That is as much of a lie as Ryan Lochte down at the games. And I'll pause there. Good to hear from you, Andrew, we were talking about the Olympics just now. Certainly, it'll be great to get your thoughts on that. But I did just want to ask, since you are in the UK, I started the program. We were talking about the London riots as they are recognized in 2011. Just did you have any reflections on what took place with the shooting of Mark Duggan back in 2011? And if you've seen anything around the 5-year anniversary of his death and the rioting?
I've not seen. I was late, by the way. My phone wasn't working, so I just had to just sort it out to chime in. I've not seen anything here at all in London around the anniversary, one way or the other. I've not seen anything in the press. What's stranger still, though, is that I've not heard of any community commemorations about it or memorials. You know, that's the thing that we would normally do. But I've not heard anything going on in Tottenham. I've not heard any of the you know, Pan-African groups in London doing any memorials for that. I mean, I'm not saying there wasn't any, but I've not heard any of the... I wouldn't expect the national press, I wouldn't expect white people to do anything or say anything, really, because it doesn't serve their purpose. But what's strange is that I've not heard any of the groups say or do anything. And that's the bit that I want to find out about.
Hmm. I know they had a march, or at least I've seen the photographs. They had a march that was supposed to be in connection with, I guess, members affiliating with Black Lives Matter over in England, where they had Mark Duggan's mom, who is a white woman. And they had, he did have a daughter, Mark Duggan, where they were out and they had signs up remembering him and connecting that with Black Lives Matter and all that. I know that went on.
There was a Black Lives Matter march, you know, here. You know, the Black Lives Matter, you know, they are active in England, in London. But I know that that went. I don't know when that went on. It's interesting because I wouldn't say that the Black Lives Matter campaign, it's almost like they don't connect with what has been happening here before, meaning, you know, with all of the other groups, mainly African groups, black, you know, Pan-African groups that have been in London probably for, I don't know, since the 70s, you know, up until, you know, throughout the 80s, 90s, 2000s. They don't really connect with any of them, to my knowledge. You know, it seems to be a bit of a separate sort of thing. You know, I'm not sure why that is, but that's the sense that I get. You know, I do know why it is. It's because, you know, there was an African American woman on TV here explaining, giving her definition version. I didn't get the name, but giving her version definition of what they stood for. And I listened, and you know, everybody's got rights. I totally agree with that. But there's some things, values that particular groups in this country wouldn't be in favour for. Let's put it like that. And so it seemed that and so their central core values, as expressed by this person, I wish I could remember the name. It was a passing news broadcast, so you know, I wasn't even quick enough to tape it. I mean, the values that she was expressing possibly wouldn't tally with some of the core values of some particular Pan-African groups in this country. Which is, so from that standpoint, I could understand why they may not connect. You know.
What was the nature of the disconnect in terms of, I guess,
well, so for example, I want to stress, you know, I mean, I do think every you know, if you're a human being, I do think everyone's got rights, you know. But you know, if you're going to bang on about feminist rights, if you're going to bang on about gay rights, if you're going to bang on about LGBT, whatever that is, rights, whatever, if you're going to go on and on about that, right, then that's, you know, certain people are simply not going to listen, you know, because there's particular Pan-African groups in England, right, and that is not their first concern. You know, the first concern is basically freedom for freedom from neocolonialism, freedom for Africans worldwide, and freedom meaning an end to white supremacy, effectively, right? Like that's the main central, and self determination for African people. You know, there's this view that I believe in, that we get kicked in not because we're gay, we get kicked in because we're black. Right. And you know, that's the thing. And so all that other stuff really is periphery, is secondary. Right. And so if, you know, if this, but and so therefore I can understand the disconnect, you know, because if someone's going to go on TV from Black Lives Matter as an apparent spokeswoman and then bang on and on and on about all that sort of stuff, right, that might play well to white liberals on TV, because it's almost like to dilute in the waters. And white people like that. They enjoy that, you know, that dilution. Do you know what I mean? As long as you don't get on and just talk straight about Black Lives Matter, then it's great. And that's probably why she was there in the first place. That's probably why they let her on in the first place. You know, so that's I personally think that's what the disconnect is.
I am not surprised. I have seen manifestations of that in other parts of the world, whether it comes under using the term intersectionality, but it's got to be some way of, as you said, diluting the conversation so that we're not focused on The problem is racism, white supremacy. It's got to be, oh, man, it's class, and we got poverty in general, and poor white people, and LGBT rights, and gay rights, and transgender rights, and on and on and on and on and on. You just add all this other stuff to it. I've seen that exact sort of thing, and I think racists, I think they especially appreciate that because it does not add clarity.
That's right.
In regards to understanding that the major war on this planet by far is white terrorism, domination of black people.
That's right.
The person that dialed in, last four digits 9401, did you have either question, comment that you wanted to add in as well as we proceed with the conversation? 9401.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, I was listening to the Firefighter from Florida, and I think you're talking about stereotyping black athletes, and I thought about Ellen DeGeneres, and
the gay Rosa Parks.
Yeah, how she photoshopped herself on Usain Bolt's back and tweeted out that racist comment, and you know how 24, I think he was saying that they stereotyped in terms of like they couldn't participate in that sport because they're black, and now they're being stereotyped as because they're black, that's what they're going to excel in, like sports like running. And she said a comment about like basically him, she's gonna use him to do her errands, and it's like I don't see how people don't see that as being a racist. I was speaking to my mom about this yesterday, and she said, you know, she said she doesn't know what they call it, but it's inappropriate. You know, she said she can't use the word racist to describe her commentary. And I think that's all I have for now. Thank you.
I do agree. I think they did have different news reports where I guess some people did see that accurately in the way that you're articulating, the way, in my view as well, that was an act of white supremacy, racism. And I think particularly tying it to black people are always seen stereotypically. One thing that black people are unequivocally talented at is errands, help, cleaning, that sort of thing. Like, no question, blacks are the undisputed gold medalists at the help, being the help for white people in particular. So absolutely, I think of that. I also think this is not the first time that there's been some sort of issue with Ellen DeGeneres and making racist comments. I believe the World Cup just a few years ago, she didn't know where Ghana was on the map, and she made some sort of racist comment about Ghana, and it was the same type of thing where people saw it and raised the issue, and she gave some sort of tacky apology and just kind of moved forward with things. I consistently cite where victim of racism Chris Rock labeled her as the gay Rosa Parks and saying for all the work that she has done for gay rights and LGBT issues, where that just made me nauseous. But this is just another incident. That's why I think it's always great if you can just kind of be aware of things that are happening. Then you can have a catalog so this does not become an isolated incident, whether we're talking about the white collective, racism on the whole, or even individual whites. Frequently, it will not be that they have just done one thing that should be looked at as an act of racism, white supremacy. Frequently, they will have a long rap sheet of having done quite a few things that seem to be multiple acts of racism, white supremacy.
Excuse me, I guess let me just say one thing. I did bring that up. I did bring up that she said that in 2014, and my mom replied was, oh, that points to her ignorance. that's all I have to say.
Somehow, some way, they said the same thing about Ryan Lochte, that he was just ignorant, he was just a dumb kid, and he made it somehow, some way, it always gets chalked up to ignorance, that white people are just ignorant, and we just get them a little more education. We get Ellen DeGeneres a geography class. She'll know a little bit more about the different countries on the continent, and we'll stop doing these things. So that is fascinating, fascinating for the gay Rosa Parks. If other folks had commentary, they wanted to make sure they got...
Sir?
Yes, sir, Thomas in New York.
absolutely. Yeah, the Gables part. I got on Chris Rock being from the show. I look at the Olympics like it's racial showcasing. It's a very highly refined racial showcasing, and they use the black athletes to do it. If you look at the countries who's winning the medal counts, I think it's the U.S. They're up by probably double. I believe they're followed by the U.K. and China and Japan gets thrown in there, but the rest is Germany and France and Russia. It's the most wealthiest countries, the whitest countries, minus the Asian countries, which is showcasing on their behalf. But even the athletes who win from places where they don't have a lot of wealth, you find out that they were trained in the U.S. or they go to school in the U.S. or they go to school in the U.K. or they, you know. So it's definitely a lot of showcasing. I'm of the thought that blacks will excel at whatever we do if we're given the same opportunity and training as the whites. And it just shows every Olympics, and I just think that it's just the way they do their showcasing. It's the white savior complex. You know, they wouldn't have been that good if they weren't, you know, here. What I think that is even more compelling, I think the firefighter brought up Gus, you brought up the way that they have to act on the national anthem. And I remember Chris Jackson. I don't know if you remember him. He was an NBA player. He changed his name to Mahmoud Abdul-Rahim. This dude was awesome. I mean, in college, he averaged 30 points a game his freshman season, his sophomore season, his junior season, even playing with Shaq in college. He averaged 30 points a game, came into the NBA, had a great season, and that stigma and the injury, they got used that to get him out the league. But the way they want you to act when this anthem is playing, and it definitely doesn't represent you. I believe the second part of the national anthem, they talk about slavery. It just shows how whites work. I'm sure it's the same way with the UK or whatever country the guests are in. They expect it to pledge allegiance to that flag and hold their hand over that heart. Like, that flag really represents them. And it's just the way they play the game of racism and white supremacy worldwide. They use these styles of sports. And I don't see any difference between, like, the athlete who goes to, he might come from a part of Africa which might be being exploited by a European country. They're taking all their resources, and he has the right to go to that European country to get education, and he ends up playing for that country, like Italy or whatever it might be. I find it more insulting when I see these colleges come to the black neighborhoods and pick up kids from a project or something, and they know the condition that the whole, you know, area is in, but they'll go get that kid and take him halfway across the country and let him play a sport for free to make them a bunch of money. I find that more exploitative than that. I'll be my line.
Absolutely. Same system. Just the Olympics, a global manifestation of exactly what you see in terms of them coming in, fleecing, let's get some niggers on our team so we can be good at football or basketball or whatever, track and field, whatever the sport happens to be. I'm double check. I'm just going to give out the number really quick so that folks don't lollygag. If you have questions that you would like to ask any of our international participants, or if you have, you know, any other subjects that you want to make sure we touch on, the number again is 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. I do see the other folks. I'm going to get our other two callers to dial in as well. I just did want to say with the NBA players, when they were first allowed to play in 92, when Michael Jordan was on the Olympic basketball team and all that, I think I would have to go back and double check, but I think that was even talked about as an act of racism, because at the time, the United States was the only country in the world that did not allow professional basketball players to play on the Olympic team. It was just the U.S. Everybody else had professional players playing on their respective basketball teams at the Olympics. I think that people have talked about that and said that that specifically was an act of racism because, of course, all the other countries, their professional basketball players were not black. It was only the United States that would be sending over a large contingent of black people as their professional athletes, what have you. But I'd have to go back and double check, see if I can nail down exactly where that was. The person that dialed in, last four digits, 2534, as well as the person at 0613. Did either of you all have questions you wanted to make sure you get in, observations, comments?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Gus. How you doing today? Good afternoon, callers and listeners. I was on before, and I was listening sparsely because I kind of have a situation at my house. But I think I kind of heard something about, you know, pretty much when we're not good unless we're performing for them. And the conversation, the topic was about basketball. And I kind of heard the retired firefighter speaking on it, Florida speaking about it, and it just took me back to, you know, I'm from Florida. I played a little basketball around for high school, middle school, and high school. And down in, originally from Broward County area, and it's a school, South Broward, called Cooper City High School. Not sure if it's still around. But Cooper City, it's in the Davie area, kind of South Broward, South Florida, and it's down here. It's populated. It's like a melting pot. It is a melting pot. You know, you have different nationalities, a lot of mixture. But it's heavy. It's very heavy. Melon, a lot of melon down here. So different shades. So in that area where Cooper City is. It's like an area just for white, like just strictly white. And we had a joke, you know, pretty much all the teams that were playing in the basketball league, they were all mixed, pretty much mixed, predominantly black, but you know, certain schools you have a mixture. Well, Cooper City, they maybe have one black guy on the team every year. The team would be completely white. And for the most part, they would lose. They would lose, you know, they had some good teams, played a lot of real good team ball, but, you know, I'm not, it is what it is. The athletic factor and some of those things, it didn't happen for them. And when they needed it, you know, you could see them, they were going to lose. So, you know, as time, and this was in the you know, early 90s, as time went on, I noticed maybe about just 6 or 7 years ago, I noticed I was looking at the high school paper, looking at the stat line, the scores and stuff like that, and I noticed a name that was on one of their teams, so and I know it's a black guy. So I went, you know, and I went and looked at the roster, and lo and behold, you know, it had maybe like you know, 7 to 8, maybe 9 black guys on the team. You know, more than half, and I guess the roster only holds 15 before regional, before division. So at that time, it was more than half non-white people on the team, non-white guys on the team. And I just, when you guys were speaking about that, even when what you were saying just now about America sending over predominantly not in the 92 games sending over. Our squads were predominantly black, maybe besides John Stockton and Larry Bird, I think, maybe another one. But other than that, black. And it just speaks to we're not good for anything but entertainment, amping up, you know, white terrorists, you know what I'm saying? We're not good for anything unless it's promoting white supremacy, and I just had that observation. Thank you for taking my call, Gus, and I'll be fine with it.
For sure, for sure. The caller is 0613. Did you have observation or questions you wanted to share as well?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, greetings, Gus, and the rest of the callers and the international callers on the line and listeners as well. Gus, I wanted to know, may I ask a question about a television program to the international callers?
Proceed.
Okay. To the international callers, I wanted to ask, in the States today, a program is going to be restarting, Fear of the Walking Dead, and it's pretty big over here. And I don't usually watch TV, and I was watching it today, some of the older programs, and Gus actually held a program about it, about the racism within the series. It's just kind of like off the chain. And I wanted to know, is the series Fear of the Walking Dead, is that big outside of the States as well? And that's all I have.
I've never seen it personally. I've never heard of it. So I don't know if anyone else has heard of it. I've never heard of it. But then, to be honest, I only really watch a lot of factual TV. I don't watch much else, to be honest.
Thank you.
I have heard of it. I don't think that I've heard anyone speak of it. I don't think that, you know, people are really interested in that, to be honest. Not to my knowledge, anyway.
Okay, thank you.
Fascinating. That's the Walking Dead franchise. They have now another spinoff of it with the Fear of the Walking Dead series as well. I do think they have some zombie program in the UK. I haven't seen it, but I do think they have some similar iteration over there in that part of the world. I did want to ask as well, not necessarily if you all have seen any of the films with The Purge, but just there was a question raised. The Purge is a series of films. It's three different movies where it's exclusively focused on the United States, where they allow killing for a 12-hour period once per year, and this is supposed to be something that's great to tailor the population. It's supposed to be good to reduce crime and solve these other problems or what have you. But that's the theme of the movie, right? You have killing that's allowed for this 12-hour period once a year, and this is supposed to be, you know, great for whatever reason. Anyway, it's exclusively in the U.S. where this happens. And we had a person, a listener, who said, do you think that they could have such a film in another part of the world? Meaning, do you think you could have a film that's exclusively in England, where it's about, you know, in England, to solve some of our problems, we need to have one day a year where killing is allowed, crime is allowed, and you can go out and kill as many English citizens as you want for this 12-hour period, and this will be good to reduce crime or what have you. And it's in the film, the racism is there, so the violence is going to be predominantly geared towards getting black people. That's what you're going to see in the film. But do you think you could have a film like that in another part of the world? Do you think you could have a film like that in France or Germany that is, we need to kill German citizens, that's what we need to do, and it's going to be black German citizens, non-white German citizens? Could you have a film like that in other parts of the world? To I guess Lorraine or Andrew, do you think you could, could you all respond to that question?
I don't see why not. I've seen The Purge. I heard you talking about it, Gus. So I found it. I got this app called Playbox, and it shows free films. You can just download it off the internet. And so I watched it on that. And it's an interesting movie. I don't see why someone somewhere in some European country wouldn't make a film like that. I mean, this whole thing about, you know, I mean, what I got from that film is, you know, I mean, if that film's going to be made in Europe, right, then, you know, there's precedents set already for a film like that. You know, in this country, when our parents came here in England, in Brixton anyway, Brixton used to be run by skinheads, believe it or not, right, in the 50s, and Teddy Boys in Notting Hill, and in Brixton, and then those white boys used to run around basically beating up black men. That's what they used to do. So in Notting Hill, right, It was on TV in this country, right? When there was black men here in numbers, then the black guys basically just run them, beat them up and threw them off the street, you know, and they were running battles in Notting Hill. You know, that's where the Notting Hill Carnival came from. It's the fact that basically black men pretty much beat the skinheads off the street. And so the carnival itself is about really just stamping our right to be on the streets. That's pretty much why you have the Notting Hill Carnival. Forget what it is today, because now the carnival today is a white event. That's what Notting Hill Carnival is today, but that's not what it was, you know. And the same in Brixton as well. So you had white men running around, teddy boys and skinheads, just basically beating up black people because we weren't here in Brixton in numbers. But that stopped after a while. So to me, watching that movie, just you know, different people, you know, white people, whatever, and a few silly little black girls running around doing whatever to some, you know, some people stuck in a store, right? I don't know. I don't quite understand that bit. I don't know what's going on there. But you know, from a, you know, if we're saying that the subtext is white people going around killing black people, white people coming from South Africa to legally kill black people in England, then in America, then you know, I mean, to me, that's what white people have done in this country, and they would like to do it, right? But you know, even when the skinheads went to Southall is an Asian area, right? The skinheads went, was it Luton? Anyway, skinheads went to some, tried to do the BNP, which is a racist group, a National Front group, tried to do a march through some Asian area. And even the Asians basically beat them off the street. So the point I'm making is that, you know, white people have to do these things on the sly or in numbers or through the back door or through, you know, just chipping away at black people on the edges, you know, beating one of the nine areas of people expectation, experience rather. So, you know, it's, you know, coming through the front door, violence on the streets is an easy way. We can beat that. It's the other ways, you know, through the other areas. You know, through the back door, so to speak, that we're not in this country or anywhere else, in my opinion, you know, that we're not got covered. You know what I mean? It's easy to, you know, I mean, skinheads and mods, and teddy boys, that's been dealt with, and we could see that a mile off. But it's the other ways that people in here are not vigilant of.
Absolutely. Flint water situation comes to mind amongst many other means that whites wage war against black people. Lorraine, did you want to respond to that in terms of, not necessarily if you've seen the film, just if you think it would be possible, because you see them making a movie that encourages killing English citizens, even though it's going to be predominantly focused on black people, non-white people, or any other part of the world. Could you see them making a film like that?
Yeah, absolutely. They had a film here called, I think it was 28 Days, and that was a zombie film. It's the same thing. It's a purge. And obviously, he's mentioned the word about skinheads. Skinheads, it's the same thing. We had lots of films back in the day about skinheads. I think there was a show called This Is England. I've never watched it, but it is based on skinheads.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so I don't doubt that there was black people involved in that, were they? Have you seen it?
Oh, I saw This Is English. I saw that.
Okay. Were there black people involved in that? I don't know.
There's one black person in it. He gets beaten, of course, but...
It's all the same thing, isn't it? It's a purge. So I don't see them having any difficulty in making a film like that over here. In fact, I think they would love it. I really do. Every day is the purge here.
For sure. If people watch This Is England, in my view, unless my memory is really bad, it's been a few years since I saw it, but I think it is a black male who is friends with a lot of these whites who are white supremacists, and he ends up being savagely beaten. That's like the climax of the film is him being savagely beaten by his white pals, unless my memory is bad. Is that the film, Andrew?
Yeah, I've heard of the film. I can't remember the detail of the film, but I've heard of it. I think I've probably seen it as well. But yes, all I remember of it is that it's about racist white skinheads running around being racist white skinheads. Do you know what I mean? Doing what they do. I mean, to be honest, you know, when I was a kid, because we used to go down Central London and do
body popping and break dancing, all that sort of thing. So when I was 13 or 14 years old, just us as little kids, there were about 40 mods behind us, right? This is in central London, Soho, central London. And, you know, these were big guys. And they, one of them came up to me, elbowed me in the mouth. And then we were little kids. There's about three of us. We were just little kids, literally little kids. And there was about 40 of them, big kids, whatever, you know, and you know, big guys, whatever. And they, if we had stood up there, they would have kicked us in. So this is what you got to understand, right? It's quite hard for possibly for you guys to understand. In this country, on Oxford Street, right, you would be walking down Oxford Street as a black guy, and there would be mods and skinheads walking down. If they saw you, you'd have to go in, you'd have to run into a shop. And that was in the early 80s in England. Right, so that's what these people used to do, you know, and these were mods and skinheads, and nobody would stop them, right? So that was happening here, you know, and so you would have to. And then the funny thing is, these mods and skinheads, when the acid house rave scene started in London, that they all started dropping acid and taking drugs, you know, and that's what dissolved that as a white youth culture. They all became. Hippies. Acid-taking hippies.
I think they became police officers, personally. Did you hear about
the young
man that was tasered to death, the footballer?
Yes. Yeah, that was... Gus, did you hear about that?
I couldn't really hear. Lorraine, can you repeat, please?
No, I was asking if he has the name of the young man that was tasered to death by the police the other day.
I cannot remember his name, but that was in the newspaper last week.
Was it Darwin? Did it begin with D? I can't remember either.
I'll check on it, and I'll share momentarily. I'm checking on it right now to see if I can get it.
As I read in the newspaper, and this is, you've got to remember, this is a Premiership footballer. Right, not just some unknown. The Premiership footballer, right, was out, he was a bit tipsy or drunk or whatever. A policeman decided it would be a good idea to taser this man three times, right? With how many volts per application, right? And it killed him, right? And so what struck me about that is that this was not an unknown black guy, you know, that you can cover up. I mean, this is someone who plays football for a major team in this country week in, week out. It's almost like LeBron James or some other American NBA player or whatever, you know, basically just getting shot by the police. It's the same thing, and that's the thing to sort of get your head around, you know.
Dalian Atkinson is his name. Dalian Atkinson.
That's the one, yeah.
And I think it was Bill Roden. He was having this conversation. I'm not sure if I played it on the program, but he used to write for the New York Times until really like a couple days ago, literally. But he also authored $40 Million Slave. But he was saying that if you are a black athlete, regardless of how much money you have or whatever the case, that you might want to keep that jersey on once you leave the court, because you might end up in the presence of some whites who don't recognize you or don't know who you are. They forget that you play for whatever team that you're on, and you end up just being treated like just another nigger.
Particularly if
you live in an area, you know, you have a substantial income, so you can live in an area where there aren't too many black people or where black people aren't supposed to be, and they see you and, you know, don't, hey, this is not such and such, we don't know who this person is, you know, get out of here. And they call the enforcement officers, and things can go really bad really quickly. The person that called in, make sure I didn't miss a question or what have you, the person at 2648, did you have a question, observation you wanted to share with us?
Yeah, I have a question for the UK caller. I want to ask about the Brexit. I read a couple articles that said that the Brexit thing is a good thing for African people. And I want to ask the UK callers, are there any resources being distributed to the African, the black people in UK after the Brexit?
Sorry, are there any resources being distributed?
Yeah.
I don't know what they meant about it being a good thing for African people in England. I have no idea what that means. But, it's just I've not seen, no one's, put it this way, no one's come and given me anything. So I don't know, you know, I don't know of any of my friends that's received a gift or a box of gifts at the front door when they've opened it to go to work. So, as far as I know, there's been, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, what has happened here, apparently, is that since the pound is worth less against the dollar, since the pound is worth less against other European currencies, what you've had here, you've had loads of, you've had more American tourists come to the UK, you've had more, American and European tourists come to the UK. But in terms of, and obviously that's had an impact on retail jobs and tourist jobs, jobs in those kind of sectors, because obviously, if there's more tourists in England then, or in London, then that's going to be good for you if you work in, McDonald's in Trafalgar Square. It's going to be good for you if you work in Wendy's in Charing Cross. Because obviously you've got more Americans coming in, so you're gonna get an extra shift, right? But I mean, other than that, I've seen no benefit for African people in this country, black people in this country.
Fascinating. I know one of our listeners previously had said, and this was back when the Brexit vote first happened, so this was months ago at this point, but she was saying that she was hearing reports that it was going to be really bad for black people in the U.S., African-Americans, so they say. It was going to be really bad for us, this Brexit, but there weren't too many details, at least, that she was able to share with us at the time. So I said that was something we'll have to keep an eye on. The person that called in, last four digits, 6353, did you have a question or observation you wanted to share?
Yes, hi.
Greetings.
Hi, Gus. And greetings, listeners and callers. My question had to do with the, you're back on the British pound sterling, and the value I just heard you say is diminished somewhat.
That's right.
But that was a major power white supremacist move to, in my opinion, to enter the European Union and then to exit when they get ready. I mean, these are serious power moves, and I just was wondering, is the British pound sterling the only currency being used now? And I didn't see any real hiccups. In other words, we saw some bleeps economically on the horizon, but they didn't seem to be significant. Just wanted to know, how smoothly is it going, or has it gone?
Did you want to go first? Hello. Did you want to go first on this one? Did you want to go first on this one?
No, you go first. I'm trying to mute my line for some background noise.
All right. Okay. Well, put it this way. It's Brexit hasn't happened yet, right? What's happened is the referendum and the vote in the UK has happened. So most white people in this country have voted to leave the European Union, right? Voted to leave Europe, okay? But there is a two-year deadline for this country to actually leave. And those 2 years only start when this country, when the government of this country sends a letter, right, to the other European to the other countries that are in Europe. So a letter's got to go, and from that date, the 2 years actually start. Now, so that's the official procedure. However, the other European countries understand that the people in this country have voted to leave,
right? So what that means for them is that they have started to have meetings without the UK being involved in those meetings, okay? So has there been any change in this country so far? Yeah, there's been changes. Now, the changes have been that particular foreign companies are beginning to reposition. Do you get what I mean? Because obviously, if they know this country is going to leave, then they've got to figure out what, you know, those companies have got to figure out where they're going to be, what they're going to do. So they've started to restructure their businesses. I can't remember what companies have already decided they're going to leave. There's been a mainstream bank that's decided to move its offices. Can't remember which one, but it's a big bank. Only one so far, right? But there's been a number of big companies, employers in the UK that have decided to move their businesses out of the UK. Again, you could probably find it online somewhere, but so there's been those decisions and changes. In the city, in the financial district, right, it's had changes. It's had a big impact because obviously, you know, if this country is going to start taxing other companies to do business here, then those companies are maybe not going to want to do business here. So because you've got to remember that that London was a financial hub for Europe simply because the tax was very low, right? But if this country is going to be taxing, you know, European companies a lot more money, then are they going to want to stay here? So that's the big question. It's been good in the short term because obviously with a weak pound, it means that you guys can come here on holiday if that's something you want to do. If you want to come here on holiday, then you could come here for a lot less money. Do you know what I mean? But for me going to America, which is what I did, I came back from Florida 2 weeks ago. It cost me more money. Do you know what I mean? So it's bad, you know. So it's bad for people living here in this if they want to go abroad. Good for people if they want to come here. Bad if you work for a foreign company. If you're in the UK working for a foreign company, because you might not have a job in 2 years' time.
Lorraine, did you want to respond to that question about the changes post Brexit?
Well, the conversations have all basically been about the way how things are going to change. I think the change is going to be gradual this year. I have heard that, you know, there are people that are talking about setting up elsewhere and moving from people from Britain, moving from Europe back to Britain. But I don't think that the major, major changes are going to affect us just as yet, possibly later on in the year. That's all I can really say right now.
Right on. I've been seeing a lot of information saying kind of what Lorraine said towards the end there as well, that a lot of this, it's going to be a process. It's not going to be like a, okay, they voted to leave and you're going to see all these immediate things taking place, that it's going to be kind of a drawn out thing. I think as Andrew was saying, kind of even it could be a year long or 2 year long process in making all of this happen and these decisions and what have you. So that'll be something we kind of have to keep an eye on as we proceed. We have pretty much done our 90 minutes. Did folks have anything, quick, concise comment they needed to get in before we get ready to wrap things up? Knew Andrew had to make sure he got a reference to his Disney World visit.
Can I just say, I watched the remake of Roots. Has anybody seen that?
I did not see it.
Okay. I watched it because somebody had it, and I have to say, you saw it. What are these people trying to do? Honestly, you have to watch it. They've rewritten it using some of the information that that was hidden before, you know, showing that historically some of the people were Moors. But in the beginning, they're literally highlighting the fact that we sold our own people out into slavery, you know? And that's, you know, that's the main focus of the first part of the show. And then it just goes on further. Doesn't show... I mean, if slavery was the way that they portrayed it in this show, we could have dealt with that. That wasn't so bad. We got whipped. But it was terrorism. It doesn't portray it anything like it was supposed to be portrayed. You know? It's just so annoying. And I hope people watch it. Oh, and by the way, a white woman gets lynched right next to a black man. Hmm. So, watch it.
That happens every day, doesn't it? I have said before, that was exactly what you said. That's exactly why I did not watch it. And I wrote about this on my blog, the New Roots, why I was not going to watch it. And that even led to my permanent ban on any future slave flicks. Black Bondage is not entertainment. I'm not watching any more. I'm not watching the new Nat Turner film. They have another, because now it seems like they're just making a new slave flick every other day. There's another one coming out later. It's The Good Lord Bird, based on a book written by a black male. And it's just tons of these flicks. They just had another one that came out right when Roots came out. It's Freetown of Jonesboro. They're supposed to be set in Mississippi. I mean, we have more than enough slave flicks. We do not need any more movies on the enslavement of black people, and particularly if it's just going to be an opportunity for whites to clown. And emphasize what Sue Bird said of the MOVE organization, that, you know, you niggers did that to yourself. You sold yourself into slavery, so you really only have yourself to blame. Andrew, did you have a comment?
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, brilliant interview with Sue Africa. Sue, just call her Sue. Very good interview. You know, I listened to the whole of that, as well as Blood Brothers as well. What you're doing as well at the moment, Gus, absolutely fantastic. But yeah, I've got to say something though. I was in Washington, and as you know, and Miami as well. And you know, it's I've got a brother living in Washington, brother living in Miami, and they said one's been in Miami for about 30 years, and the other one's just been in Washington for 6 years. But both of them said that you have. I mean, I knew that America was segregated anyway, and I knew Miami was segregated. And it's interesting that in Blood Brothers, they talk about the segregation to some degree anyway, to a small degree in Miami, but it's totally segregated. And so, you know, driving around where my brother lives, it's a black area. And it's to get my head around that is not easy. And in Washington as well, it's my brother lives in a place called Anacostia, which is a totally black area as well. But I also went to U Street. I don't know if you've ever been there, Gus, but apparently that was an historic black neighborhood or area. And the amount of it pained me to see the amount of black men basically just drunk or physically in a physical bad way, or just on the street. And I just thought, wow, in this town, that's the capital of this country, apparently, right? Then, to have African people in this way, right? I mean, I just thought to myself, no, we have to help ourselves. You know, white people will never, ever, ever lift a finger to help us. And the thing is, that area around U Street apparently is becoming, or has already been, gentrified, right? And you got a place called Adams Morgan there as well, which has been gentrified as well. But it's just shocking. I just found it terrible, man. I just thought I'd just have to say that, you know?
Appreciate that commentary. I live thousands, or I don't know if it's obvious, but I'm in Washington State, so I'm thousands of miles, literally, from Washington, D.C., the capital. But I have been to D.C. many times. I lived there closer when I was younger. And Washington, D.C., I think, is infamous. It is well known for having very high populations of impoverished black people in Washington, D.C. I know Mr. Fuller and Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, they both are resident, long-time residents of Washington, D.C. They have talked about this for years, and particularly the gentrification that you were talking about. That, in fact, a lot of people, their theory in terms of the death of Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, that is intimately related to the removal of black Washington, D.C. residents and the battle that she was going through with her house and trying to get her out of there, and her being one of the final, at least in her particular neighborhood, being one of the final black homeowners in that area. So, I mean, that is a long running campaign that was in place way before even President Obama was in the White House. In fact, there's an article. Folks, check the New York Times. It's on the front page of the website. I don't know about the physical paper, but if you go to the New York Times website, there's an article talking about the hyper, what they call segregation, where even black people who do have money, if they have a good job and, you know, whatever, they can own a house, where they still are piled in and they are in an area with a whole lot of black people who don't have money or what have you, where you have that in large parts of the United States. I think that's the case in Wisconsin, where they just had the unrest this past week. That is a major facet of how the system of white supremacy operates in terms of where they warehouse, where they allow black people to reside, regardless of the amount of coins or what type of job that you have. So, yeah, that observation that you had, that is America. That is the United States, this area of the world, making sure that we keep black people penned up or restricted to one particular part of town. And we can move them when we feel like it. Even I know Mr. Fuller has talked about consistently that they had riots in certain parts of Washington, D.C. back in 68 when Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. And after the buildings were burned and everything, they left it that way for 50 years. Like, literally, it was just boarded up vacant lots. And then when whites decided that they wanted to move into that area, then they went in, prettied everything up, booted the black people out. And now it's great. Now they're putting shops and all that stuff in.
That's right.
That is white power.
Yeah. The other thing I want to add, sorry, because it's shocking. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
My brother drove us down to Baltimore. We drove down to Baltimore as well. It's not too far. I'm sure it's Baltimore. We went for a drive, and there's loads and loads of houses, right? Just boarded up, right? And that was a black area, right? And it just made me think. One, how much are those houses going for? Two, who owns them? Three, you see, it's the sort of thing that, the way my mind works, right? Sort of thing you could buy for cheap. And even if you don't, as a black person, even if you don't move in there right away, although it'd be good to fix them up and sort them out. But if no one, I don't know who owns them, because I was just thinking, you know what? We could buy those houses and just, because what I realized, if you own the land, right? You know, if you own the houses and own the land, even if you don't do nothing to it right away, it's yours, you know, and they got to come and wrestle that away from you. I think white people count on black people not to buy property, but to always rent. I'll leave it there.
For sure. We will give the final word. Our caller 0748. Did you have I don't know if it was a comment or a question. What did you want to share before we get ready to conclude things?
Just two quick points. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Greetings to Gus, the host, and all the listeners and callers. I had a quick question. I keep hearing about this term, social justice warriors, SJW. Have you did a show? Well, not a whole show, but have you focused on that word being used? Not just really over here, but has anybody ever heard of that word being used in response to racism?
I've heard the term. That is kind of a new little revision that they put on it, adding the warriors part on the end. But I certainly have heard the term social justice used, and now social justice warriors, that this is applying to an individual. We have not done a program on it. I think it would take me some time to go back and dig through back like earlier programs, 2009, 2010, where that did come up, where we had some white guests on who were self-referencing and saying that that's what they were fighting for. That's what they were about, is social justice, where they were asked what that means, and even a distinction in terms of why they say social justice instead of just justice. But it would take me a moment to kind of dig through and pick out exactly which white people got questioned about that. But it was not something we devoted like a whole program to.
Okay. And it was another part of the audio segment from last night where I think the lady was interviewing what was the athlete's name from the Olympics?
Dr. John Carlos. Dr. John Carlos.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And she asked him a question and he responded. And I thought about her response. It was just a, did you remember that?
Was it when he asked about the politics, when they were talking about what's political, the Olympics is not political, and the national anthem? Is that where she did it, or was it a different point in the interview?
It may have been prior to that. It may have been prior to that. And she did, that's the only response she gave. It didn't extend anything other than that. Mm. Like she seemed like she was dissatisfied with what he said, mm-hmm. but didn't give any other commentary to the response.
Wow. I have to go back to listen to see where it is. I think various people, when they were commenting on that segment last night, that was an NPR interview with Dr. John Carlos. He was talking about racism and the Olympics and all. But I think several people pointed out they felt like there were several points where he made comments that it seemed like the white female who was interviewing him, where she did not agree and just didn't respond, or just flat out ended the interview at the end when he made the comment about what is political. But yeah, I'd have to go back to listen to pick out specifically where she gave her response.
Yeah, because I picked up on that as some subtle hostility, but that's to be expected. And that's all I had for now. And thanks for the time to speak.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Our global Sunday talk on racism. We even missed out on a few of our international callers who just had other things happening, but hopefully we'll be able to nab them back in when we get together for September. I can even put the date on it now, so that'll be September 18th when we'll be on the program. 1 week after the 15-year anniversary of 9/11, we'll be doing our Global Sunday Talk next month. We will be back. Blood Brothers, since that was mentioned, we'll be doing that. Our book club this coming Friday. I'm trying to get the date to see if we can get the co-author, Professor Randy Roberts, on the program this month. I thought it would be grand to have him on, ask him some direct questions about the text that he put together. Also, I've been trying to call Pastor Gaddy. He was mentioned when we had Antoinette Harrell on the program, talking about the Dozier School in Florida, no less, and the years of abuse that went on against black boys at this school. Pastor Gaddy, he is one of the black males who actually opened up and talked about the sexual abuse that he experienced. You can put that in when people talk about Nate Parker as well, but Pastor Gaddy talked about the sexual abuse that he experienced at the Dozier School, and I'm trying to see if we can get him on the program. Roz hooked me up with his book, so just trying to get a date and time nailed for that. You can check the Black Talk Radio site for the updates for the programs that are going to take place. You can also check Facebook as well. I always have the broadcasts posted a day before they air, so you can just check there. You can also hit us on Twitter at Until Justice, or you can drop me an email if you get confused or just need information. You can't find something in the archives. UntilJustice@gmail.com is the email. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Again, we're on Twitter at Until Justice. Big thanks to all of our folks who were able to tune in early, get their questions, comments in. Great hearing from everyone. Special thanks to all of our international participants, Lorraine, Andrew, always great hearing from you all. I think it is super important to keep the analysis global. I think Minister Malcolm, one of the strengths, he had a global understanding of racism, white supremacy. This is not a problem that is isolated to one specific city or a town or one specific area. This is a global problem. It should be talked about, understood as such. It is a global white collective dedicated to terrorizing, maintaining the system of racism, white supremacy throughout the known universe. Keep that in mind at all times. I will say again, and particularly given what we heard about Mr. Dalian Atkins, the former football player in the UK who was tased to death by an enforcement official. If the reports, I think Andrew said in some of the reports that some of this was related to alcohol, that he might have been under the influence and police got called, I state consistently, it would be best if we can stick to sobriety as long as the system of white supremacy exists. I have just seen way too many instances worldwide where alcohol is not helping us solve this problem at all. If anything, it's making it easier for whites to continue to terrorize and dominate us, especially if you're going to be out and about, particularly if you're going to be in a vehicle. You do not want to be under the influence of anything. You never know when you could bump into a Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson, and this is anywhere in the world this could happen. And even if you don't bump into an enforcement official, white person badge or no, anywhere in the world is dangerous and can lead to a lethal, life-ending encounter. Keep that in mind and take it seriously. I will say again, one of the worst combinations in the universe. Whites, alcohol. It is always a bad idea. Again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. That's it. Again, thanks to all our participants. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, in all areas of people activity, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, no brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm a up. Victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.